When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and hype merchant, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Anything for clicks, as you know.
You've got everyone somewhat hot under the collar about Richarlison, Nathan.
I got myself hot under the cover about Richarlison to an extent I wasn't really expecting, to be honest.
That's good.
I don't know. Maybe I should have a tiny bit of hesitancy over the sample size that I was using to mould my opinion in that video, but I'm feeling really good about this deal.
So last week we had a conversation about Richarlison pre-signing, and I said I think he could cover two positions, and you said no, I think he can cover one. Are we saying then that you've convinced yourself that he can cover Kane too?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm only halfway into your video, so for those who don't know, Nathan makes videos for us behind the Patreon paywall, and they're very good. They're very enjoyable. He goes deep in the he does data analysis at the start of the videos too, and then follows it up with video analysis. So you're getting the full data analyst video scout experience. It's good stuff, Nathan. Bardi, have you watched it yet?
No, I've not watched it, but I was going to ask him: is his lack of goals a concern for you?
I don't think that he is going to come into the club and just be like an enormous goal machine. I don't think that he's going to be like, putting up really impressive numbers, even on like a per 90 basis. I think he's a good finisher. I think he's a capable goal scorer. I don't think he's going to be a dud in that department, but I'm sort of more pleased coming away from that video about what he can do for us tactically in terms of replacing both Kane and Son. So us not having to completely change the way that we play when we bring him into either role. And outside of that, I just have so much faith in if the team can continue to operate as it does, the team will generate goals and wins, right? So even if Richarlison isn't, putting up, even if he's putting up sort of 0.2, 0.3 goals per 90, which I think is still, good. We as a team, I think, will function really well. Even if he has, a poor finishing run or anything like that. I think that we don't have to. You think about the players that we brought in prior to try to do this for us, especially players who really lacked a first touch, Janssen, Vinicius, you could argue, who had no back to goal play, who were just big poachers. That's so far removed both from Kane and so far removed from what Conte wants from his forwards that it warps you. Whereas I think Richarlison, and the same with moving Son off the pitch. Any time in the last 3-4 years we've moved Son off the pitch, there's no depth in behind. So I think Richarlison can do both of those things, basically, is my takeaway from the video I've now completely spoiled. even if he's not a massive, massive goal producer, which he hasn't been at Everton are terrible, I still think outside of that, he'll still be very good for us as a team.
So a lot of the kind of Italian bloggers and social media people that I follow are really hot on this. They really like this and think this is a great idea. And a lot have been comparing Richarlison's signing to when Tevez went to Juve. Now, I don't really remember Tevez that well at Juve, but I'm feeling pretty good about this. And the more I think about it, the more I read about it, the happier I'm becoming with it. So I think this is a good thing.
I also think it's worth repeating the point from the previous podcast that because of his his name value and his market value. Mm. Again, unlike everyone else we brought in to do this before, maybe a partial exception for Llorente, he will actually give Kane a reason to sit on the bench, on Son a reason to sit on the bench on given occasions, which, you know, I think Bergwijn was a very good player, still is, still on the books, in fact, but, like, couldn't really justify removing Son or Kane from the pitch. Mm. Without, you know, causing some upset or causing fans to be, why would you take Kane off when we need to go? You know, all those kinds of things, right? And I think Richarlison does a lot more of us in that department. I think that that might be something that we've overlooked, both like the club itself and also us as fans maybe have overlooked a little. And he, I think he just ticks all of those boxes. Again, even if he's not a brilliant goal scorer, which he could be.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Aside from the name, he comes with a bit of an aura.
Yes.
He sort of has a...
big dick energy.
Yeah, he's got some big dick energy about him, hasn't he? I mean, and he was Everton's best player.
Yeah.
Let's not be around the bush. He was Everton's best player. And, you know, we like to shit on Everton because... it's funny with Frank Lampard as their coach, but they're not a terrible club. They've got some other good players. Richarlison was the best. He was their best player for a couple of seasons. And we've just taken him from them like candy from a baby. And he comes and joins us as Brazil's first choice striker. And like you say, someone who can allow us to put Kane on the bench every now and again. Of course, not in the big games. Of course, Kane's going to start against all the big teams, but he doesn't need to start every week, particularly when it's 2-3 games a week. That's going to be very bad for Harry Kane. The other point that I think we didn't mention on the last pod, but we definitely have spoken about off air, is the sort of succession planning element for Son, because we forget that Son's not a young man anymore. He's kind of...
he moves like one.
He does, but his age has snuck up without us really realising it. And you just don't know with players who have that pace how long the pace is going to last for.
And what he can do without the pace.
And, you know, Son shoots really well off both feet, but will he get into positions that allows him to shoot off both feet? That's the critical question.
Is Son that fast? I know he's rapid. I don't think he's like lightning speed. I think he's very smart and he knows when to run and when to move. But yeah.
That's definitely true. Like his movement is really quite exceptional. But I think he is that much of an outstanding athlete. I just think that
He's not Adama fast, though. Adama does over 100 metres.
No one's Adama fast.
He's got a good stride in him, though, Son. You forget, he's 6 foot. He's a big guy. He's got a good stride.
I think there's a significant difference between his on-ball speed and off-ball speed, right? Mm. He really accelerates for those balls over the top that Kane plays. Mm. But also, generally, his off-ball speed is where he's like a 99th percentile athlete. Whereas his on-ball speed, like his ability to carry the ball around players and stuff, is good, not great. And I think that's where it can look like he's not that fast, but I think he is that fast, basically.
Mm. I still don't think he's the fastest at Tottenham. I think maybe Reggie's faster than him.
Maybe.
In the flat line.
Or Sanchez. Sanchez is rapid, isn't he? So it's Son's 30th birthday on Friday. Happy birthday, Sonny boy. I don't know if that's a thing in football, whether they care about turning 30. Probably depressing for them because it's sort of another step towards the end of their career, but yeah.
Well, turning 30 was really hard for me. The thing for Son is that he's going to turn 30 twice because his career used to count birthdays differently. So he turns 30 last year. They have changed their year recording methods to match the rest of the world. So he's also turning 30 again this year in his
holy shit
native country.
Holy shit. Did not realise that. Good knowledge, Nathan.
Yeah, very nice.
I think, as far as I'm aware, if I remember correctly.
So if you like the sound of Nathan's video, and many did, we've got lots of new signups, go to patreon.com/theextrainch, join 1,200 plus people who are sub to us. We appreciate every one of you. We've got some different tiers. There's one which is just, you get nothing but you support your boys. There's a middle tier where you get everything and it's 6 quid. I actually forget how much we charge. And then there's a higher tier, which is just support us, get everything, and also you're rich.
Eventually, one day, that will be more things when we are able to offer more things. But that's still waiting for now.
Yeah, it's been waiting since we kicked it off. In fact, if you've got ideas for that, let us know. That'll be good. We've got loads of questions to get through this week, chaps. So we've signed Richarlison since the last poll came out. It sounds like Jed Spence and Clement Longley will be finalised in the coming days, I suspect. Bardi having absolutely savaged Longley in the last episode.
I just don't think he's very good, and I can see the merit in doing it. It's a really low risk opportunity, and I guess if our number one targets aren't there, then let's do it. But I just don't think he's going to turn into this superstar defender that we're going to cash in on. It's a Gallini punt, in my opinion.
Oh wow! Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Think back to this time last year. How much would you have taken for Eric Dier?
Oh yeah, I would have wheeled him out.
Five million, you'd have driven him yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a very similar kind of situation where you have a very capable defender who needs a better setup to protect him, a better mentality around the club, a change of scenery, all those kinds of things. And that's not a promise that he's definitely gonna be the player he could be. He could still carry those mistakes with him, but I think that has to be the angle on this transfer. Like you take Maguire away from the current situation at United, you know, before when he was at Hull and in his first season or two at United, a brilliant defender, and now he's this laughing stock because he's made a few mistakes and United have this horrifying, toxic environment around their club that we had here for a little while, again, with Dier, with Sanchez. Sanchez hasn't turned into a magnificent centre-back, maybe like the other two you could argue have, because he still has technical limitations in his game, but he's also not this massive scapegoat that he was before. He's just sort of an okay backup. I think that's got to be the thinking, is that we can make Lenglet the player he previously promised to be.
Fair enough, and I'm for that. I have my doubts about him, but I would like to see him come in and give him a go. It's just I can't help but get those thoughts of him getting absolutely murdered in the Champions League out of my mind, and that's all I see. So perhaps in a better system with a better coach and a different style, it might work for him. Let's see.
There's a touch of back to basics about Conte's defensive approach as well, isn't there? He doesn't try and overcomplicate things defensively. I mean, there is some complication when we've got the ball, but there's like a very stark, we have the ball, we don't have the ball difference of Conte, right? It's not like you are expected to be a playmaker at all times. You defend first and foremost, then you win the ball, then you regroup and you reorganise and you do the on the ball stuff. And I think that's the kind of thing that suits players who need their confidence built up because they get to focus on one thing at a time. I think that's really helped Eric Dier, as well as, you know, the line being a bit deeper as well, which was always a big struggle. Dier in the high line running towards his own goal was always a slight concern. That's been completely mitigated by the way we defend as a unit now.
For sure, and I accept the fact that Conte has this effect on players. He takes players and makes them better than what they are. Lukaku is an example of a player who's really good, but Conte makes him look even better. And when other managers try to use him, he just doesn't look as effective. And I'm sure there's Conte tax on Skriniar, on De Vrij, Bastoni, Barella, all these guys. Maybe not Barella, but there's definitely Conte tax involved in all the other players that have had good careers. Victor Moses, these guys.
Yeah, wing-backs galore.
Yeah, Doherty.
Because I think he compartmentalizes things for players. He sort of makes it more straightforward. He kind of removes some of the tricky decision making, which can confuse players.
He's 6'1".
Longley?
Yeah.
Okay, that's more than adequate.
It's taller than Ben Davies, isn't it?
He's got a few inches on Ben, yeah.
Ben just seems bigger, though. He just... The biggest person, like Jan Vertonghen never had big man energy. But when I met him in real life, he's absolutely huge. He's a giant, but I never thought he was that big.
He's not got much of a jump on him. Davies is definitely out jumping Jan, especially on a like a height per height ratio.
Yeah, I can imagine Vertonghen's quite dense and he just doesn't move, just doesn't get air, does he?
So we've got several questions about transfers. In fact, I'll start off with this one, which is about a specific player, because I think it's quite interesting. So this is from Henry Kirby, who says, "We'll keep it short but sweet. Cavani is a free agent. Are you surprised we've not been linked with him? Feels like a great option as a backup striker with lots of experience winning titles, who could help in the locker room and on the field." And Henry is listening from North China. So thank you, Henry, for listening all the way from China, and thank you for your question.
He's really old. He's 35. Goodness me. I don't know. I'm definitely when we're talking again about like name value, giving Kane a reason to be on the bench, he certainly ticks that box. I think he was actually kind of okay at United.
Same.
Again, the United were a mess. Yeah, maybe again we signed Charlison, and I think that does a lot for us. Maybe if we went with someone who we didn't think could play the central role, then Cavani on a 1 year might have been a decent deal. I don't know what he's looking for, though, you know.
Mm. Yeah, he might be looking for a longer contract.
I think Cavani's a player that we would have gone to in a different time.
Yeah.
Kind of like a new Llorente option, but I don't think now. Not now.
Okay. Mike P says, do you think we can sustain transfer activity like this over multiple windows? We're not going to get regular cash injections like other clubs, that's for sure. So how do we stay competitive beyond this window?
I mean, we have to sell better and then just continue to stay in the Champions League. I think that's the way we sustain it. Pretty much like all the other teams around us, continue to get people through the door and getting into the deep part of the Champions League.
That's it, isn't it? It's Champions League qualification is absolutely critical. The advantage we have over some other teams, and yes, they will have cash investment from wealthier owners and benefactors, but we do have the stadium revenue and the possibility of having Guns N' Roses concerts at the stadium that brings in huge amounts of money and NFL games being played there. And I think that does genuinely set us apart from other clubs. I mean, we can sustain this this transfer activity. And like Barney says, some sensible sales would definitely not go amiss. If players aren't being used, get them off the books ASAP. Don't let them rot like we have done in the past.
But I do think we need to stop making huge losses on players. So, for example, we can't sign an Ndombele again, spend 50 million and then sell him at a loss. I think, for example, when the time comes to sell Romero, we sell him up. You know, we always try to sell up and really increase the book value, because there's more to, what's it called, where you sign a player, then you work out their contract over a period of time.
Amortization.
That's the word. I've been reading too much Swiss Ramble. Just making sure we sell at a good price and sell high and don't take losses like we did on Ndombele and we'll probably do with Lo Celso.
Dan, who beat Bardi in a cage match, Bardi, if you remember, Dan says, is there any worry that we've left ourselves with too much to do in terms of outgoings and might be left with some unwanted dead weight come the end of the summer?
Yeah, this is... So I was talking to Greg Jenner about this on Twitter, right? Our method of business for the last forever has been Levy will make sure that we have generated our budget from our sales first. And then we will bring players in, which maybe is the sort of financially safe, with that sort of isolated his own thing way to go about things. But it means that players don't come in till late in pre-season and the conditions were different here. We have a director of football and Conte demanded players or a certain number of players in before the beginning of pre-season. And so here we've arrived at this. But we haven't had really any outgoings and they're players who are going to be tough to move on. I would kind of like to have seen a sale by now. I guess if you go by previous windows...
We sold Carter Vickers, Nathan. What more do you want?
Oh, yeah. We sold Carter Vickers. Yeah, I don't know. I'm beginning to be a little worried. I think we moved Dele on fairly well in a sort of fairly smart, interesting, creative deal. I'm a little worried.
We're about to sell Bergwijn for 30, 40 million.
The lower end of that, I suspect.
Yeah, 20, 25.
Well, 30 was definitely mentioned today, but you never know whether it's pounds or euros, which does change things a little.
I still think we're waiting to see what happens with Lo Celso and Pau Torres. There might be something going on there. Ndombele is the one which I think we'll struggle to sell. I'm not sure if he was back at the training ground today, but
he was.
He was. Oh, okay, cool. So, I think that's where we need to make a bit of money.
I'm not worried at all about the sales because I saw what Paratici did in the January window and it made me very hopeful that he's got this and he'll just sort of sort things at the end if needs be. And that might just be getting them off the wage bill for the coming season and worry about the transfer later. Sort of, as Barty says, just loan out, deal with it. And then, hope they have a fantastic season and their value shoots back up. I mean, Lo Celso is still a very highly regarded player. I think he perhaps he overpaid slightly in the end, but I think he's largely maintained his value. And Don Blais is different because we did pay a lot of money for his potential, and it hasn't quite panned out how everyone hoped. But there's still value there, you know. There's still a good midfielder.
There's a lot of teams he could be very beneficial to, and they might not know it, but it is the case.
Yeah, I agree. And you never know, like a few good preseason games and suddenly another club goes, hang on, we need a midfielder. And this guy looks like he looks like he's fit.
He was at the training grounds, but I don't know if he's going to be like involved in Conte's actual preseason.
He'd have to be, though, wouldn't he? He'd have to be. You know, you can't just completely exclude. Maybe he can. Maybe he can. I don't know.
I mean, he has to fly. If he doesn't fly to South Korea, then that's pretty bad. Was Danny Rose and a few others once left off a plane, left behind to be sold? Yeah.
I think so.
I mean, that's got to be hard. Just not even invited on the plane.
Mm. Yeah, I think that would be like unnecessarily ruthless. wait and see, I guess. But I'm not worried about the sales. I think Winks, it sounds like he might well go to Everton. That could be 20 million. Bergwijn to Ajax would be 30. Reguilon, although he doesn't appear to want to leave, is obviously wanted by several clubs. We've had bids for Emerson Royale. I suspect we're waiting for the Spence deal to get finalised before we think about selling Royale. It's gone quite a bit on Joe Roden. I was expecting a lot of interest in Joe Roden because I think he's a really competent player, but it does seem to have gone quiet there. Tanganga, there's been interest at various points in the window. So there's lots of players that have clubs sniffing around. And as we know, as the window starts to hot up, lots of deals trigger one another. So it's 2 months to go. Not feeling too worried yet. I think it's okay. We've got enough money that we can keep buying without having to sell. RR10 says, even with the excitement of Perisic, Bissouma and Richarlison being secured early in the window, is there still a sense of disappointment that for the two positions of most need, we look to have added Longley and Spence, who are not exactly immediate upgrades on current incumbents? I mean, Bardi, you sort of hinted towards that with Longley. And obviously, having been linked with Bastoni at the start of the window, we all got our hopes up and thought this is something special. Are you disappointed?
I am a little bit disappointed in Longley because it's not Bastoni, and that's not Longley's fault. That's me and what I really, really wanted. But I still think Ben Davies is an exceptional defender, and if Longley can come in and offer a rotation there and something, then that's great. And if it works out, £10 million is a fantastic deal. Spence, I'm a little bit concerned about that it hasn't happened yet. We've been talking about this for a long time, and I'm not sure what the delay is. But I'm not down. I'm really not down. It's just me being really picky. I mean, we signed Bissouma and Richarlison, who are exceptional players. And Perisic, I don't know if you saw him today, topless. What a man. Just look at him. What a specimen. So I'm really excited. I'm not going to let a 1 week lull in transfer activity get me down.
Yeah, I feel pretty optimistic too. I think Spence is really going to surprise people. And I think it will happen. I think it's just a case of negotiating tactics, and maybe we've got some other irons in the fire, but I fully expect the Spence deal to go through. And I think he is, for me, he's an instant upgrade on our right wing backs.
I think he
adds something to the team that we just don't have, which is ball carrying from the wing. He is genuinely an exceptional ball carrier, the kind that we've not had since Kyle Walker. And that's going to be a really useful skill set to have. And his crossing is certainly a weakness. There's some room for improvement there, but it's better than Emerson Royale's crossing, and it's at least on par with Matt Doherty's crossing. So I'm not overly concerned about it, to be honest. Nathan, are you feeling disappointed, or are you just generally happy with the signing so far?
The main thing I think is generally happy. In terms of Spence, it's like, I think that in most circumstances, like if he were to join, if he were to be joining other members of the top six, for example, I would be thinking of him as more of a prospect type signing.
Okay.
But the sensation I'm getting is that the club feel and Conte feels, and this is kind of speculation here, right, is that they feel that they, because of the tools that he has and because of what Conte asked from his wingbacks, and because of Conte's own faith in his own coaching ability, the Spence can pretty much hit the ground running. So maybe that is a slight gamble, or is certainly very optimistic. But I don't know. I don't hate that situation. It's tough though, because we have two right wing backs who are sort of quite good, but not quite good enough. And can you move both them on? Do you want to bring two new in? This is that we've been having the same conversation about right back for like 5 years, basically. They're sort of decent, but I have some worries. Let's get a new one in at least. And yeah, I don't know.
And I think Spence is better than that for me. I mean, I think the upside, I mean, Spence's ceiling is very high.
Definitely.
I really, really bank on him becoming an excellent right wing back. Whether that will happen next season, I think it's fair to question. But I think the ceiling is higher than any right wing back we've signed in the last 5 years.
I want to go back and watch the video that we recorded but have not yet released.
Hopefully this week the tapes will get released finally. Blanky says, I am constantly seeing we need a replacement for Ericsson. Does the midfield really need a passing player? With our midfield being predominantly defensive, if our wing-backs are more attacking, does this not mean we can just use the midfield to link the play rather than starting the play? Surely this means we can spend big on wing-backs and not need to worry about an attacking midfielder. Nathan, what do you think?
I think every team who want to contend for the title need a good passing midfielder. And maybe Conte's teams are the exception. You've seen something of an exception in the way of like teams like Liverpool, not so much now because they bought in Thiago, and like the Red Bull teams whose game is more about turning the ball over high. But I think most teams need a really good passer in midfield, like at least one. And in fact, you could argue that Liverpool have improved as they've moved away from being quite so dogmatic in their play style towards having more technical players like Thiago. So I would really like for us to have a creative passer option in our squad, at least. Someone, you know, one of the reasons I really liked the Ericsson idea, that is, of you know, it looks very much today like he's going to Man United, which I dislike. But one of the great strengths of the Ericsson would be like, okay, we're having a tough time unlocking a parked bus. Let's bring Ericsson on for 20 minutes into a role which, you know, maybe you feel like he's not defensively strong enough for at this age, but we're going to take that risk and use him there, that sort of thing. Or he can come on and play in Kulusevski's position for a little bit and stuff like that. So that we have that option. I'm a little concerned about us going into a season just with no option there. Or our option there is we'll bring on Winks to play the sixth row and hit long balls over the top, maybe. I just, that's sort of not enough for me. So even though we have four starting quality box-to-box central midfielders, I'd really like if we had Fabian Ruiz, basically, or someone like that to give us another option. I don't think it is an absolute necessity, but if we're going to give ourselves $150 million transfer budget and we're going to bring in, you know, argue over $5 million over Spence, we might as well bring in a Parsi boy.
See, I'm okay with us not signing a Parsi boy. I think a trio of Bissouma, Højbjerg and Skip will be okay. I think they'll do okay as long as our wing backs are good enough. And I think with Perisic and then Spence and perhaps a different right wing back option, I'd rather see the money spent there. I'm okay with it. I think we can live with that. I'd rather get a better defender in, a defender that can progress the ball as well as a midfielder.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think our passing range doesn't just need to come from midfield. It can come from the defence. It can come from Harry Kane dropping in. And with Perisic, it can come from the wide players as well. I'm interested to see what happens with Saar, because he is someone who can ping the ball.
Yeah.
We don't have like that many crossfield pass merchants, but Saar is one. I think Skip could be developed into a player that pings a lot more from deep. And Højbjerg, when he's got time in the ball, can pick a pass as well. But yeah, I'm really intrigued to see how Saar fits in central midfield over pre-season. In fact, let me pick up this question next. So this was
before we get there, does that mean we're all going to just tip Brian Hill into the bin? Because before, under Nuno, he was playing centrally a little bit. And there was talk about that, like a kind of Modric-like young boy who could turn into something. So I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like it. I mean, he was back for pre-season today as well. We don't know whether there was a sort of, whether he was homesick We suspect that Conte didn't like his lack of physicality. We think that was the reason that he was loaned back out and will presumably be sold. But you just never know if he hits the gym over pre-season and proves to Conte that he's got the muscle mass to compete in midfield, then maybe he could be a bench option for midfield as well.
There is a vague Barella-ness to his play.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'd like us to see a little bit of Brian Hill pre-season, because there were moments last year early and under Conte when Conte needed something, Southampton away and stuff, and he didn't do the obvious and he did turn towards Brian Hill instead. Mm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Patrick Green wrote to us, said, I'm a youth coach here in New York City, and I work with some Senegalese coaches who rave about our young midfielder Pape Maître Sarr. These are guys who know their stuff too. One is the former goalkeeper of Senegal, who still runs an academy back home in Senegal and knows Sarr since he was a young kid. They love this kid and think he's going to be a star. Is there any chance he can fit into Conte's plans this year, or is he a long-term investment who will be shipped out on loan again? What sort of player is he? What sort of player is he projected to be?
Okay, well, let's do what sort of player is he. He is another box-to-box player, another very sort of like athletic up-and-down player. He's an on-the-ball box-to-box player. He has a really good carrying and a pretty good dribbling game. And as we alluded to earlier, he can really ping the ball hard, both in sort of long passes and shots. Where questions remain that can't really be answered. We're going to do a video on him soon, I think, and see if we can get into this a little bit. But where I'm having a hard time from what I've watched so far is getting a read of his sort of more general possession play, right? His ability to receive the ball from a player behind him on the turn, under pressure, combine in short passes, give and go, find teammates quickly, all those kinds of things. There's still a lot of question marks over, so if he can bring his sort of neat and tidy possession game up to some of the standard of some of his stronger attributes, there's a real player in there. Absolutely. I just have some, and the question marks aren't necessarily him. It's just I don't feel that they can be answered at this time. So maybe he comes in, plays a bunch of preseason games, really impressive, and we have five central midfielders. All of whom profile at least a little bit similarly to one another. But I still sort of have some areas where I'm like, I can't get a read on him.
Interesting. So I'm gonna ask this next because I think it ties in. Cal the aggregator, our Caligator, our fantastic aggregator in Discord. Cal says, who is your preseason player to watch? Anyone you think is going to end up playing himself into more minutes for the season ahead? And it's a similar question, also I'll tie it in. Gianni Nico Cinelli says, which Spurs player do you think will flourish under Conte next season? Who did not flourish this season? He suggests Sessegnon and Skip. Although, to be honest, I think both Sessegnon and Skip at times did flourish under Conte. I think there was sort of Sessegnon really showed huge improvement by the end of the year, and Skip was looking great before his injury. So, Bardi, any thoughts from you on players to watch in pre-season who you think might kind of edge ahead in Conte's mind?
I mean, it's nailed on who's going to have a sparkling pre-season. Lucas Moura. It's just the way he is. Him and Lamella love pre-season. So Lucas Moura is going to do a brilliant pre-season, and the question's going to come up, oh, maybe there's something there. But putting that to one side for obvious Reddit reasons, I do think there's an arc here. I think there's a redemption story for somebody.
Yeah.
Ndombele, Lo Celso, Brian Hill, maybe not Roden, but I do think there's a moment here for somebody just to go, hang on. I've seen what you guys did last season. It was an incredible turnaround. You're in the Champions League. I've got to get myself motivated and do something big. So I do think there's a redemption story somewhere there. I would like it to be Ndombele just to come in and beat up pass the midfielder and prove us all wrong and just do it. But I don't see it. But I think perhaps Lo Celso, maybe. I think one of them is going to do some madness pre-season and Conte's going to go, fuck it, I'm not selling them.
Nathan, any thoughts from you on players to watch in pre-season?
Yeah, I kind of lean towards Vardy's position that one of the players that we're expecting to go, just the odds are that one of them sticks around, has a good preseason, and is in some way functionally helpful to the squad. I don't know. You know, Vardy's list, and also add both Bergwijn and Emerson Royale. I bet Bergwijn's sale is going to be announced by the time this podcast goes out now. But
that's the thing.
One of the players we're expecting to move on will still have minutes for us next season.
Yeah. And the thing I always like about preseason is you get a blend of experienced players and youth players, and you get to sort of see what stage the youth players are at in their development, and a few often shock you. So if I throw some names out there, I mean, I think Troy Parrott and Jack Clark will surprise people with how much they have progressed over the last year.
Yeah.
Especially Parrott, but I think there's a lot of mockery of Jack Clark because of the way the transfer fee was reported, which I don't think was accurate, by the way. But I think Clark's a really, really talented player.
He just had a really, really good season. And I was also preparing to do a video with you on him. But maybe we're about to sell him. So if he's sticking around on the books, we'll have a look at him. I don't know, I still feel like, okay, if you're... How old is he now?
21.
21. If you're too good... for League One as a wing back, his first season as wing back at 21, I think you're still projecting towards being a capable Premier League player. I think that I don't know if he's interested in staying on our books, signing a new contract, going back out on loan, or if he's like, no, I just want a permanent move and I want to begin my career properly now. I don't understand if that's his position, but
yeah, for sure.
I think that he has a pretty high potential as a wing back still, and I want to see some more of that, especially with Conte at the club.
And the thing about Parrott that I like in our current setup is the fact that he played so much on the right for MK Dons, and we don't have that much cover on the right for Kulusevski other than Lucas. and I think that could be really useful. And Parrott obviously can play up front as well. I really think there's a very good player in Troy Parrott, and I'm not against him going out on loan at all, but I think we should take a proper, good, hard look at him in pre-season and work out where he is in his development. Then we have Alfie Devine, who I think is absolutely a Premier League player of the future, hopefully at Spurs. I think he's going to be a star. Suspecting he will go out on loan this season, but... And also because he's been away with England under 19, we don't know when he'll be back to join up for pre-season. He'll presumably need a bit of a break. But I think he could surprise a few people. And if I was to throw out one more name...
Paczkowski wide centre-back minutes?
I'm not against Paczkowski getting some minutes, but I'm going for another wide centre-back, actually. Look out for Charlie Sayers, left-sided centre-back. Okay. Who we signed from Southend. He's 18. He is... very much a ball-playing left-sided centre-back. He's quite a tall lad, so he could hold his own. He played some left-back during his younger years, and he's sort of become a centre-back, so I think he's very well suited to the wing-back system, the back three. And yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if Charlie Sayers was involved in some of those early pre-season matches. I'd certainly like to see it happen, because I think he's one that we should be looking to fast-track over others. So yeah, I think there's plenty to be excited about in pre-season. Mike V says, following on from that discussion, which member of the squad do you think is in need of a loan the most badly, and to what level of competition? I've got to say Dane Scarlett, I think, at this point is gagging for a loan. He needs to go and score some goals in League One, I think, and really put his stamp on the game and show what he's about. I don't think we did him many favours last year. I don't think he was terrible, but I don't think we did him many favours by sort of putting him up against some big old centre-backs who kind of bullied him. I'm sure he'd have learned something from it, but yeah, it'd be good for him now.
Bullied.
He really did. He got kicked about, didn't he?
Wow, yeah. I have my fears about him. He still looks so young, no? I know he is young, but he looks really young. He needs to develop. He needs to start eating that chicken.
He looked pretty good for the England under-19s. Did a decent sort of rounded job as a striker. Some good hold-up play, some running behind, some decent finishing. Nathan, you got some flack for criticising one of his finishes.
From you.
Partly from me, but mainly from everyone else. I just
thought that he needed to play that first time with his left foot and curl it. I just thought that he put it in an area where there were a bunch of defenders. There were like three defenders. You should have got a toe on it, and the keeper should have had it covered too. Maybe it caught them all off guard, and that's the impressive bit, right?
But that's what I liked.
Did it go in?
Don't fucking did it go in me.
The game slowed down for him, and he passed it into the far corner. It was calmness personified.
I saw the beef. If there's a Twitter beef, I always go sniffing around to have a look. And it went in. It wasn't the tidiest finish in the world, but it was okay. It went through some legs, yeah? And if it goes through legs, it's always good.
I liked it. Hmm. Anyone else you think is ripe for a loan?
I think we kind of covered it. Parrott, perhaps. But now you've got me interested in seeing him hanging around the first team.
I'd love to see Parrott in pre-season.
Yeah. You sold him now.
The other one that needs a loan is Niall John. He went on loan to Charlton last year and didn't play a single minute. It was the most pointless loan ever. Charlton were having a terrible time and they brought in too many loan players. And so he couldn't get on the bench because they already had too many loan players. They didn't put any faith in him. I think if they did, they'd have been better off because he's a really talented, technical central midfielder who can also play as a number 10. But that was an awful, awful move in hindsight. And we need to make sure he gets a better move next time round.
So I got to ask a question. Who's responsible for that? So why did we loan him to a club that already had too many players on loan? And why the hell did they loan him? Is that our fault or Charlton's fault?
Well, I assume they made promises that they then didn't keep. I can't imagine Spurs would have gone for it unless they were told that he would play games, because it was a complete waste of half a season for him.
Mm.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, we've now appointed a whole bunch of backroom staff this summer, so hopefully we'll have a better handle on loans and hopefully developing some partnerships with some potential loan clubs, because that was not it. Waste of everyone's time. Horseshit and Burgers, once again, one of our favourite handles. Horseshit and Burgers says, is it now or never for this season under Conte? As exciting as things are at the moment, I can't help but think that this is going to be short-lived. I remember Nathan saying the players will get bored of training and other teams will find us out. So, do you think Conte can evolve and we could have a few years of him, or is he a very good one-trick pony and we have to turn this into something tangible now?
I'm feeling a little less concerned about other teams finding him out, but I do maintain the concern about players getting bored of his training methods. And I think that rather than other teams adapting has been the bigger thing in his career so far. The optimism here is that like he didn't have a full season last year, and that there is an ongoing turnover of players happening that is sufficient. I think that there is also, because he didn't, you know, win the league in his first season, there remains a hunger, like a collective hunger there to make this situation work.
I was just about to say something similar, that the size of club and the state of our club as it stands kind of benefits that, because there's room for growth. So whilst you feel like you're moving towards something, I don't think you'd necessarily get bored or it would go stale. I think if you've won lots and then you keep winning lots, I could imagine that the training would get slightly boring, maybe. I don't know. I think if you can kind of project to the future and think what you can become and you're seeing improvement year on year, I don't think that's boring.
It is worth noting, I think, that Perisic has joined, but both Eriksen and Bastoni have actively declined to return to Conte's training.
Do you not think with Eriksen that it comes from us declining him?
There are plenty of other circumstances involved in that decision. I'm not saying I believe that's why. I'm just saying that is a present thing going on there.
Okay.
Eriksen is looking for a big contract and United love to overpay, right? I'm not getting Champions League, so I want a different kind of assurance in some way. Oh, okay. We'll give you Pogba's wages, you know? Bastoni is an Inter fan, likes living in Milan, you know, in no rush to move, has plenty of his career ahead of him. There are other circumstances. And again, Perisic has come to us. So I'm not saying none of Conte's former players want to join. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that is, it's got to be an element in their decision making. And it's not so strongly positive that it's overpowered the other circumstances.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about the players getting bored. Harry Kane is someone that strikes me. He's like, he loves his gusto meals. He likes chop. He likes his one onion. He likes his one bit of garlic. He likes to know how much seasoning and what to chop, when to put the potatoes in. So Harry Kane, for me, as long as he's smashing out those meals and getting the goals, he's not bothered. He's going to be on board with this. And I think for Tottenham, we've just been so wishy-washy the last few years of just not doing anything. I think getting a manager in who's just pummeled them into a system and a style of play that is good and it's exciting. It's not boring football, man. We're scoring goals and being really interesting. And I think once you master that, then you start adding new players, fresh players, and freshening it up. I don't think he's had the opportunity to rebuild a team. At Inter, it was being sold from underneath him. Chelsea's a whole different can of worms, and Juve kind of had run his course. He'd been there a long time. So I'm not worried about Conte being short-lived. If we have another 2-3 seasons of him, then that'd be great. And I do think he's here for the long haul.
For the first time in domestic club football history, players are going to be looking forward to set piece training as a relief from.
I do believe that Conte's system gets us to a certain point in the game, and then just by simply upgrading those individuals. So Doherty's good, you know, but Spence has the ability to do what Doherty does, but then add another dimension to it. Basuma's like a next step up from Hjoiberg or Bentancur, and then Sessegnon is a step up from Reguilón, and Perisic is completely something different. All of a sudden, then you add an individual nature into it, but they're able to still perform the patterns and everything else. But there is still that chance that they can swivel their hips and just step out the line dancing and do some samba.
Listeners, in case you missed it, you can tick off potatoes on your extra inch bingo card right now. I'm not too worried about this. I mean, I do think that we've got a 2-year period now where we have Conte, Kane and Son hopefully all at the club for the next couple of years, and that is probably as good a chance we're going to have at winning the league. In God, I mean, I don't know until how long it'll time. Be. Until next time we completely rebuild our attack. Do you know what? In the shower the other day, and I was contemplating whether I was going to bring this up on the pod, I was thinking, how awful is our fan base going to be post-Conte?
Don't do this. Don't do this. Shut this off right now. Barty, say something more about potatoes, please.
everybody, we don't need to worry about it. Daddy.
No, just like... The sense of entitlement, I think, is going to be off the scale. We don't need to worry about it now. We don't need to worry about it. And Potter will be at the perfect antidote.
Potter will be getting booed by England fans. What I'm enjoying about Conte is everyone stopped talking about Pochettino. Finally, no one talks about Pochettino anymore. So that's what I'm enjoying.
They still just about on the Koi's subreddit photoshopped night new signings with the Pochettino arm.
Oh wow! What they should do is Photoshop the arm and then also Photoshop Conte's head onto Pochettino's head.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the Galaxy Brain version. Alex Bartlett says, question for the pod. With the move to 5 subs from 3, will the Premier League become even more intense, fast-paced and physical? Will managers set up tactically to make 5 subs later on in the game by taking off players who are exhausted? Will Spurs benefit from the move to 5 subs overall relative to other teams?
First of all, excellent question. Really, really good question. I think that... for the most part, top level coaches don't make enough substitutes already. They didn't already with 3. And in competitions where there have been 5, they have been slow to move towards 5. So I do think that all of those things will happen, but not for 2 or 3 years. Will we get to the level where the sort of meta-tactical use of substitutions has adapted to that level?
I mean, what I think what it offers us, and a smart manager and a smart recruitment is you're able to take those positions in your team that are really kind of high work, industrious, mm-hmm. to centre midfield. And you can have a second, not a second string, but like in ice hockey, you could have a plan. And I mean, I have no idea about ice hockey. I played it once on the PlayStation, but you could have individuals that are the same as the ones that started, just quickly rotate them out. So for example, special team, yeah. Or Italy during the Euros would always have Jorginho, Verratti, Barella. And then what they would do is they would just swap out those. Out would come Barella or Verratti, and in would go Locatelli, a player of a similar standard and similar skill set, and just be able to change it. So there's never that drop off. So if you're a high pressing team and your midfield works really hard, you just swap out those three. You can swap out two of the three, and the same with your forwards or your wing backs. I think it gives us the opportunity to really be smart in the transfer window, and then just be smart in how we play.
60 minutes every game, two wing backs and two central midfielders change over.
Pretty much.
So we've pretty much already become accustomed to that with Conte. We knew it was going to happen because Nima told us as much. The wing-backs change on 70 minutes every game, at least, you know, at the latest point without fail. What I'm looking forward to is three wing-backs on either side playing 30 minutes each. I think that's what we need to aim for. 30 minutes gone, first sub comes up, both wing-backs off. 60 minutes gone, same again, both wing-backs off. Constant fresh legs. Why not?
I think I 100% agree. You could your wing back can murder.
Okay, here we go. Two questions to end on. Jack Mack says, if you had to make a Spurs five-a-side team from the current squad, who are you choosing? No rush goalie. So this is something that comes up periodically, the Spurs as a five-a-side team. And we normally sort of settle on a core group, and then there's a couple we argue over. Who's getting into the five-a-side team from the current squad?
I'm putting Fraser in goal. I just think he fills the five-a-side goal. Like, you're not getting that ball past him. And just in my head, he's better with his feet and rolling it out. So I would put my hand up for Fraser in goal.
Okay.
Romero.
Romero's the most nailed-on member of the five-a-side team, I think. He's absolutely perfect for it. Absolutely perfect for it.
So now Ndombele.
Oh, and Ndombele in five-a-side would be a dream, wouldn't he?
I don't know. Is he going to get up and down that pitch? I don't. It's pretty.
It's a small pitch.
It's a small pitch. Okay, fine.
And there's no like tactical instructions. He doesn't need to be doing what the manager tells him. He doesn't need to be. You know, it's all play. It's all just creative. Okay. Whatever he wants to do.
I'm going to put a question mark next to him, but I will accept if you two say Ndombele, let's do it.
I actually think Bergwijn would be a fantastic five-a-side player. Just loads of little give and goes, like their burst of pace in the final third. Shooting off both feet, I think Bergwijn would be really nice, but I think you can't not pick Son, can you, for a five-a-side team? Be so good.
Okay, so Fraser Forster, Romero, Ndombele, Son, and Bergwijn.
You're not picking Kane. You're picking Bergwijn over Kane.
I would go Kane over Bergwijn.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of. And, so his long passing is basically negated by the fact that the pitch is smaller, and you don't really do much long passing in five-a-side typically, but he's just an elite footballer.
He'll put the ball in from anywhere, and I would take out Son and swap Son for Kulusevski.
Ooh, Kulusevski's a good shout.
I don't like Kulusevski in five-a-side. I'm not feeling that.
Really?
I think his outstanding attribute is like his dribbling when he's got lots and lots of space to work with down the touchline, and like his crossing, which is a long pass again.
True. I was thinking more for the defensive work rate. You need someone who
gets up
who
and
covers.
Down.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that, like, when you think about defensive work rate in five-a-side and playing with your mates, and then you think about Premier League football, you might have a situation where it's like, oh, you know, Kane, you used to press lots and then maybe not so much anymore. But compare that to like your mates down the park in five-a-side. Premier League footballers are doing a lot of defensive work compared to that. So I'm not worried about it. Even who's the laziest forward going. He's still getting up and down. And
Ronaldo.
Even Ronaldo is doing more than like the guy who sees himself as the poacher down the park.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about how I play seven-a-side as it is, and how annoyed I get when people don't track their man. And I'm now thinking, actually, I just want Choi Bear and Skip in the Spurs team because they're not going to anger me. Because I know they will follow their men every time.
I think Kulusevski and Ndombele give you butts, and they give you, like, they could take the ball with the opposite because it's tight, and all the skills that Ndombele has, Kulusevski has as well. You could really play off them, drop the ball back to Kane, and Kane could score on the pitch from anywhere. I don't know if you watch Totti when he plays with his five-a-side team in Rome. He's just pinging the ball in from all angles, and I think that's what Kane would do.
You've seen Kane play walking football?
No.
Okay, all right. Everyone's homework is to search for Harry Kane walking football, and then you will have no doubt about putting Kane in your five-a-side team.
Nice, nice. Now, we got a lot more out of that question than I expected. Well done.
Well, we didn't do the official lineup. Have we agreed with it? Forster, Ndombele, Romero, Kane, and who are we going? Kulusevski, Son, or Bergwijn?
Well, I'm saying Son, but I think we can leave that to disagree if you want.
It's fine. We'll finish on this one. So both Elijah and Brian asked similar questions. What are your worst ever takes?
I mean, there's been a few from you, Windy. I think my personal one, I'm not going to call you out. I'm going to own up to mine, is when we signed Sanchez. I was convinced Davinson Sanchez was going to be better than Ledley King. I just thought the way he played and everything else that he was going to be better than King. And I'm owning it. I'm admitting it. I bet Windy won't admit any of his.
No, I am. Yeah. I know what mine is.
I've got plenty correct. Pickford, Romero, that kind of stuff. But I'm gonna go Sanchez.
No, I know comfortably what mine is. I wanted Moussa Dembélé sold to Sunderland. I was absolutely done with Moussa Dembélé for Spurs. I could not see what value he could possibly add. And then he went on to become the best midfielder we've had in decades. Other than Modric, of course. Yeah, that was a horrible take. Sorry, Moussa.
I guess mine would be something along the lines of, you know, Tanguy Ndombele will transform the club and assert himself as the best midfielder in the world.
I'm not going to lie, after that, after his debut against Villa, where he scored that goal, I walked out of that stadium and anybody that would listen to me, I said, he's the greatest midfielder that's ever played for Tottenham. I was convinced we'd never seen a player like him before, you know?
It's so annoying that it didn't work out because he's so talented. Oh, God. It really upsets me still that we didn't manage to get a tune out of him.
Could come back. This could be his year. You never know.
I wrote an article on the Fighting Cock forum that Winks should replace Dembele as he was beginning to struggle with his injuries.
How do you feel about that now?
Not great. You're going to make me defend myself now.
You don't have to. It's bad takes, Nathan. Don't defend yourself.
All right, it's fine.
You weren't sure about Romero either.
That's true. I had doubts. The thing is, I largely stand by having that hesitancy. And I did say, you know, the upside is through the ceiling. I just have a worry about the downside. And it paid off. And I said, you know, you've got to take some gambles sometimes. So I don't feel too bad about that one. Maybe the video, the overall tone of the video was more pessimistic than it should have been.
There's probably a final one that I should just nail on. Probably I backed Jose too hard. Probably.
He's come down off the hill.
I backed him too hard. I still think he did a decent job at Roma. He won them a cup and stuff, but perhaps I did go too hard on my manager. I just think I needed something to believe in, and unfortunately it was Mourinho, so maybe I shouldn't have backed him so hard. But then it would have been just the three of us sitting around every week going, oh, fucking Mourinho, he's shit. So it had its purpose.
Rather than the two of us just doing that, you mean?
Liverpool fans, especially Grace on Football, love to retweet an old tweet of mine from 2018 saying that Klopp would never do better than fourth or something like that. That one's aged very well.
Yeah, I think one of your mates, Nathan, found a tweet of mine where I said I said this is what Mourinho's doing at Spurs and Klopp, and he's leaving Klopp and Guardiola in the mud, something like that.
Go on, Bardi. I'm feeling good today. I'll give you one free hit at me. What's my other worst ever take?
Let me get my pipe and slippers. There's just in recent times. There's Ben.
You're allowed
White.
One. You're allowed one.
There's Ben White, and then there was your overconfidence.
You've had your one.
That England would win the Euros, and I think you even used the term. I starred it in WhatsApp. I think. Don't worry, Ricky. We've got this.
You got me.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian.
Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.